This is The Draft Room with Brian Lowe. The Draft Room is your exclusive look inside the NFL Draft.
Okay, so we're moving down there and giving up a sixth. We're giving up a fifth. We're giving up a third.
Think you know who will go in the top 10, whose stock is rising, and whose is falling?
There's a lot of guys with good value on those.
Who will Mr. Irrelevant be this year? You'll find out as we go inside the Draft Room with Brian Lowe.
Happy to have you joining us here inside the Draft Room, year number two of this program here on Patriots.com Radio. Happy to have you on board. It is April, which means it's draft month. It is draft month. The final 3 days of this month, the 2011 NFL Draft, and what makes this year's draft a little bit more unique is that's all we got. That's all we got in the NFL right now. We got the draft. Nothing else we can really worry about in terms of trades and free agency. In fact, as we speak right now, the NFL and the NFLPA are in a courtroom in Minnesota dealing with all the CBA nonsense, and that's not what we're focused on 1 hour a week here on Patriots.com Radio inside the Draft Room. This is Wednesday, April 6th. We've got three more Wednesdays before the draft, and we'll be going beyond the draft as well. That's right, five Wednesdays in a row inside the Draft Room. We're talking about the draft from a league-wide perspective. Absolutely, by all means, can we talk about the Patriots? And we will. We will talk plenty about the Patriots because, in a lot of ways, they sort of control the draft this year, and that actually is the way a lot of draft observers nationwide are viewing this draft. But we want to talk about the league as a whole. Who's going to go number one? Who's going to be top five? Which positions are really in focus as we narrow in on draft day? Many topics to discuss, and we want to hear from you, as always, here on Patriots.com. It's web radio at Patriots.com. Web radio at Patriots.com is the way to reach us. You might remember me from the Fantasy Lowdown. We do a weekly fantasy football show during the NFL season. Of course, I'm also on Patriots.com, Patriots Today, and you can check us out there. We'll be talking about the draft shows that we have going on Patriots Today as well during this hour. And what we're going to do is talk about a lot of different topics, and I have some that I'm going to bring up. We want to know what your topics are. The Carolina Panthers are on the clock. Which direction are they going to go? And, you know, I've read a lot about this year's draft, and I think Mel Kiper, of all people, is among those saying that this could be, I think he was talking specifically about quarterbacks, but I think it relates to the draft as a whole, one of the more topsy-turvy drafts with a lot of players really in that could go from anywhere from 1 to 10, could go anywhere from 10 to 30, first round, second round. It's a very intriguing draft, and let's start with that quarterback position. The trend you end up seeing in the NFL draft, I think, is from January to April, the top-notch quarterbacks end up rising, rising, rising to the point where often you get a guy number one. The last couple of years, Matthew Stafford and Sam Bradford, if you remember, were not the slam dunk number one draft pick from the beginning to the end of the draft season. They weren't. Same thing this year. Cam Newton and Blaine Gabbert are seen as the top quarterbacks in this year's draft, but either one of them could be number one. They both could be top five. They both could be top 10. I think we're going to end up seeing one of those guys go number one to the Carolina Panthers. And if I had to make a guess right now, I think Blaine Gabbert is the number one pick in the NFL draft. I don't think he is a slam dunk NFL quarterback, guy who can lead a team for the next 15 years. But what you end up seeing is teams that have a need at quarterback. And let's be honest, often if a team is picking first overall, that team has a need at quarterback. They'll take the risk on a guy that could and should be a top quarterback in the league because you need to fill that position to win. So all it takes is the Carolina Panthers to think that not only is Blaine Gabbert or Cam Newton the best player on the board, but that they're the quarterback to lead that team from the dregs of the NFL to the elite. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. The jury is still out on Sam Bradford and Matthew Stafford as to whether or not they will be elite, Pro Bowl, Super Bowl winning quarterbacks. The jury is not out on Jamarcus Russell. That jury has put in its verdict, and he's out of the league 4 years, really 3.5 years after he was drafted number one overall. He's out of the league. We can go back to Drew Bledsoe and Rick Meyer in 1993. We can go back to Peyton Manning and Ryan Leaf in 1998. It's hard to judge whether a quarterback who's seen as a top five, maybe number one guy, is going to be that guy for your team. But the bottom line is teams early in the draft tend to take that risk on quarterbacks. So which direction will the Carolina Panthers go? You know, Cam Newton, Blaine Gabbert are certainly among those bandied about for number one pick in the draft this year by the Carolina Panthers. If they decide to go defense, certainly Marcell Dareus is seen as one of those top guys. Daquan Bowers was, but it seems like he's slipping. Patrick Peterson, the cornerback, a lot of people think he's the best player in the draft this year, but will he be the number one pick? Probably not. I think it'll end up being quarterback. So you got the Carolina Panthers number one. You got the Denver Broncos number two. They took a quarterback in the first round last year. Of course, Tim Tebow. They've put out some smoke screens that they'll be interested in the quarterbacks. John Elway, former quarterback himself, you've got to imagine that he, whether he likes Tim Tebow or not, he's always going to be looking at the quarterbacks and maybe will think highly, more highly about quarterbacks than a lot of other general managers, a lot of other decision makers, because he knows that position well. Maybe it'll be the other way around. Maybe he won't think highly of too many quarterbacks because of higher standards. Buffalo at number three. Do they take a quarterback? Will they have their pick of the two quarterbacks? Will they go with whichever quarterback Carolina doesn't take if Carolina does indeed go quarterback? The Cincinnati Bengals, to me, are an extremely intriguing team because I think they are very much in the market for a quarterback. They might be saying that Carson Palmer will still be with them, but it looks like all sides agree Palmer's got to be out of there. Palmer threatening to retire, and I think they might go quarterback. I really do. I think Blaine Gabbert, if he's there at four, will be a Cincinnati Bengal. And then Arizona. It wasn't long ago that they took Matt Leinart first in the first round of the draft. He's long gone. But do they go quarterback, or do they go the free agent route? So those are just the top five picks. But here's the trick, in my eyes, with quarterback this year and with really the draft as a whole this year. And it's the fact that the draft is going to come before free agency. Now, there's a small chance, and I mean a minuscule chance, that what's happening in the courtroom in Minnesota today could lead to free agency and draft. Free agency and trading period opening before the draft. Extremely minuscule. If a lockout is blocked and there's time for the league to get its ducks in a row to get free agency going, virtually impossible, but a small chance. Most likely, the draft comes on April 28th, Thursday night, with free agency having not yet begun. Now, what makes that fact such a compelling part of this year's draft is that teams usually use those 7-8 weeks before the draft to fill some holes in free agency and use that process to determine what really they need to address in the draft. But this year, not so much. Take the Patriots as an example. I think when it comes to the offensive line position, the fact that draft is going to come before free agency plays a huge role in the Patriots' approach on the offensive line. Consider if free agency had already taken place, had already begun. The Patriots would know, most likely, Matt Leinart's future. Is it in New England? Is it in New England on a one-year contract, a three-year contract? Does a team like, say, Kansas City, that knows Matt Leinart pretty well, swoop in and give him a four-year deal at money that the Patriots don't want to address? And the Patriots suddenly have that hole at tackle where Sebastian Vollmer is their number one tackle, Nick Kazier's number two, and guys like Mark Lavore are number three. Now, the Patriots could go the free agency route and take another tackle, but that would be unlikely. Think about Logan Mankins. What happened 2 years ago with the Patriots in terms of the franchise tag? Matt Cassel was given the franchise tag, and he was traded on the first weekend of the new league year. So the Patriots knew right off the bat that that Matt Cassel, you know, they had that squared away, and they had another draft pick at the top of the second round. Well, with Logan Mankins being given the franchise tag, if free agency, trades, and all that had taken place already, the Patriots might, I stress might, they might know the future of Logan Mankins. Maybe a team comes in with a first-round pick for Logan Mankins, and the Patriots know that they have that extra first-round pick, but also that they have two huge holes at guard because Stephen Neal has already retired. Now, taking this all a step further in how the lockout affects the draft is, will teams feel more, will teams be looking at players differently in terms of, will a player in this year's draft be able to impact us, contribute to us right away? There won't be a rookie camp right after the draft this year. There won't be a mini camp, most likely. There may not be training camp. Rookies will not be able to get the playbook. Rookies will not be able to work with teams' coaches, strength and conditioning personnel. Rookies might be coming in blind in, say, August or even September, preparing for a season that might start just a week or two later, a couple weeks later. That's a tough spot for rookies to be put in. And if you think about quarterbacks, there's generally a large learning curve. A lot of teams don't put their rookie quarterbacks out there right away. Can you, if you're a team that needs a quarterback right away, do you go with a quarterback in the first round thinking he's our guy this year? Do you supplement him with a free agent like Mark Bulger? When will they be able to bring in a Mark Bulger? How much will that rookie be able to know before the season begins? Now, that's just quarterback. I think that pertains to a lot of other positions as well, but a quarterback especially. So a lot of intrigue in the draft this year in terms of those elements, how the lockout affects the draft. So we want to get into all of that. Webradio at patriots.com is our email address, webradio at patriots.com, here inside the draft room. We'll be coming your way every Wednesday through the draft and actually 1 week beyond the draft here on patriots.com radio. You can catch us 12 to 1 Eastern and, of course, also available as a podcast on ESPN. I say ESPN because I'm looking at ESPN.com right now for some draft news, but on Patriots.com, that was a little bit of a faux pas, Kevin, wouldn't you think? Patriots.com.
You're just a little rusty, that's all.
A little rusty. It's been about 3 months.
It's
been about 3 months since I sat in this chair right here for the Fantasy Lowdown. Let's get to our first email of the 2011 season of Inside the Draft Room. This is from Sam in Brighton. Hey, Brian, can't listen live, but we'll still email the show. We appreciate that, Sam. I'm going to give you two draft scenarios for the Patriots' first four picks. You pick which one you'd take. You have to take one. All right, Sam putting me on the spot here. I have not looked at this email yet, but here we go. Scenario number one, Ryan Kerrigan at number 17, the Purdue defensive lineman. Muhammad Wilkerson, the Temple lineman, at number 28, Leonard Hankerson, the wide receiver out of Miami, at number 33, and Jordan Todman at number 60. Or scenario number two, J.J. Watt at number 17, Justin Houston at number 28, Michael LeSueur, the running back, at number 33, and Randall Cobb at 60. To me, Sam, I like scenario number two quite a bit. Let me first say this. When it comes to the Patriots, I think the Patriots have a very clear-cut top three needs. And in some ways, I should be narrowing this down a little bit more, but in general terms, their top three needs are pass rush, which could mean outside linebacker, could mean defensive end, could mean a hybrid, could mean a guy who played outside linebacker in college, but D-end in the pros. So I think number one is pass rush. Number two, I think, is offensive line. And that's way too general for the NFL draft. There's five positions there and starkly different. But I think that offensive line, and this ties into what I said earlier about Matt Light, Logan Mankins, their scenarios, their status. But offensive line, we know that they have a hole to fill at right guard. Stephen Neal has retired. We know that Logan Mankins' long-term future is uncertain, to say the least. We know that Matt Light's long-term future is uncertain, to say the least. Dan Copen's under contract for a while, but it's not like his career is on an upward trajectory right now. Sebastian Vollmer is the only guy who appears to be a future cornerstone on the offensive line. So they have one specific, no questions asked hole, and several others. So I think offensive line is number two. The number three need, offensive skill position. Running back, wide receiver, I don't care which one. They need some speed and explosiveness on offense. They could field a pretty good team with the wide receivers and running backs that they have right now, the combined stable. And then when you add in the tight ends as well, they could field a very good team. Wes Welker, Deion Branch, possibly an emerging Brandon Tate. You got Danny Woodhead. You got Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis. A couple of guys that have some interesting skill sets. But I think they desperately need speed, youth, explosion, either at running back or wide receiver.
I think especially, too, at wide receiver because, I mean, how long has Tate been in the league? Is this
he's 2 years.
Two years?
His first year was virtually a red shirt. I'm not writing him off, but there aren't a lot of signs that he's going to be.
He's shown us the speed. He just hasn't shown us the ability to
catch the
run
ball
a route
regularly.
And make a play.
Exactly. So I'm not writing him off, but I don't think Brandon Tate is someone who's blocking them from taking a wide receiver early in the draft. So those are my top three needs. And in Sam's scenarios, and he gave me an ultimatum here. I've got to take one of the two. He addresses my first need and my third need, not my second need. So if I could tweak this, Sam, I would get an offensive lineman, probably a tackle, but I don't know which one, and put it in there. But I like your scenario number two the most because I think J.J. Watt might be the perfect player in terms of pass rush in this year's draft for the Patriots. The guy can play the 3-4. He's a defensive end. He's a guy who could be probably not a Richard Seymour type, different dynamic, different skill, different size. But I think he could be a defensive end that you could place in there. Justin Houston, I think highly of, and I think it's some off the field problems that are preventing him from being more of a surefire late first round guy. Michael LeSure, I like. But I just don't see them going running back with those top three picks. I don't think running back is going to be one of their picks in 17, 28, or 33. I think at 60 is a much better, a much more likely spot, but I like him as a player. And I really like Randall Cobb. When I was talking to Todd McShay, at the draft, I had already heard from Randall Cobb, at the combine, bring different position players out at different days. We heard from Randall Cobb. He was a player who, sparked my interest. I think he's an explosive guy, not a big guy, but an explosive guy. And then in talking to Todd McShay, asking him about offensive skill position players, Randall Cobb was the first and only specific player that he brought up as a good fit for the Patriots. I think he'd be really good. Now, that's not to say I don't like your scenario number one, but I'm not huge on Ryan Kerrigan at number 17. I think Wilkerson is a good, underrated guy from Temple. I think he's just the type of guy the Patriots might look at. Not a huge name, but a guy they might pursue. Don't really think Leonard Hankerson is one of their kind of guys. And I think Jordan Todman, good player, ton of production in college. I don't like him in the top two rounds. I think if you can get him in the third, maybe in the fourth, I think you go for him, but I do think he will go somewhere between 50 and 70,
yeah.
But I don't like that for
played
the Patriots.
Played in a bad, bad league, too. The Big East was awful.
He had one huge year. Local guy, I think, would be a great story. Would like to have him here, but I just don't like it there. In those two scenarios, Sam, I like scenario number two. Webradio@patriots.com is our email address, webradio@patriots.com. Speaking of running backs, I do want to bring up one Don Banks article that I came across today about running backs, and this is something I felt as well. Mark Ingram is really the only running back who appears to be a first-rounder this year. And you see him going anywhere from, 15 to the Miami Dolphins, really to 28 to the Patriots, in that range, sort of a 15 to 32 kind of guy. But he's really the only running back with a first round grade this year. And I'll tell you, I agree with Don Banks, who wrote today, while there seems to be a growing debate whether former Heisman Trophy winner Mark Ingram of Alabama or Illinois' Michael LeSure will be the first rusher selected, maybe the more pertinent question is whether this year's first round will come and go without at least two running backs being selected, something that hasn't happened since 1963.
Those are before our days covering football, Bilo.
Well before, and I'm getting old, Kevin, but that's well before my time. It's well before most people's times that are probably listening to us on Patriots.com.
It's true.
Two first-rounders have been selected in the first round every year since 1963, almost 50 years.
What are your thoughts on Ingram? I know from listening to the PFW in Progress show, those guys aren't that crazy about him. I got to see him play in person.
You went to that bowl game, right?
Yeah, fortunately. Yeah. Granted, it was a runaway of a game, but as a physical specimen, watching him run, it was pretty impressive.
I think he's a complete back, and I'd love to see him with the Patriots.
Yeah.
But I would be stunned and I would be, I would really think, I would think that they made a mistake if they take him in the first round. Think about what Don Banks, this is what Don Banks said.
Okay.
Of the past six first round running backs selected, 3 in 2009, 3 in 2010, we're still waiting for a breakthrough season from any of them. And this is me talking now. At running back, I think running back is the position that you can and should expect immediate production for a few reasons. One, running back is not the most difficult position to learn what you have to do in the pros. To be a complete running back, yes. To be a complete pass-catching running back, good blocker and all that, yes. But to purely be a running back, if you go to a team that just needs you to run the ball, you can learn that and come quick. But and the other thing about running back is with the short shelf lives of running backs, teams are willing to use them early on, knowing, hey, he might not have a long career anyways. Let's run him. But think about the last six. Last season's first round rushers, Don Banks says, all struggled to stay healthy. CJ Spiller, Ryan Matthews, Javid Best. And in the case of 2009's first-round draft class, injuries have also limited the production and impact of Denver's Knowshon Moreno, Indy's Donald Brown, Arizona's Beanie Wells. So think about these six running backs taken in the first round the last 2 years. C.J. Spiller, Ryan Matthews, Javid Best, Knowshon Moreno, Donald Brown, Beanie Wells. Underwhelming to say the least. I'm not writing them off. They can't be written off, but underwhelming. Now think about this. Who are some of the undrafted running backs from the last couple of years? Arian Foster, the 2010 NFL rushing leader. LeGarrette Blount of Tampa Bay, a top, I don't have the stats in front of me, top 7, top 10 rusher last year.
At least top 10.
And a guy who is going to go into next year as the number one running back on a pretty good offense. Chris Ivory of New Orleans. Not winning any awards or records right now, but pretty good.
But a solid back.
Now, you could probably make this case, you could probably find examples at any position over the years, first round busts, but late round successes, but this is striking. Arian Foster, LeGarrette Blount, Chris Ivory were all undrafted. CJ Spiller, Ryan Matthews, Javid Best, Knowshon Moreno, Donald Brown, Beanie Wells, drafted in the first round. Lawrence Maroney is a pretty good example here.
Just the name that you brought up of the crew that was drafted, the one word that comes to mind with those guys is injuries.
Yeah.
From you and I doing the fantasy show and discussing, yep, a lot of, you know, listeners were writing in trying to figure out, well, is this guy going to play this week? Is he going to play the rest of the year? And you and I were kind of scratching our heads being like, it seems like every week these guys were on the injured list.
The lesson to be learned is while these guys taking the first round are not bad running backs or bad NFL players and maybe injuries coincidentally have derailed them, you can get running backs of virtually equal stature later in the draft, third round, fourth round and beyond, or even undrafted. And I think the Patriots, between what happened with Lawrence Maroney, who, listen, the Patriots, since Bill Belichick came in, they've had 10 first round draft picks since 2000. And really, the closest one to a bust is Lawrence Maroney. And Lawrence Maroney actually was pretty good for this team for a couple of years. Never lived up to the potential. And overall, you say he's a bust. But relative to the NFL, the Patriots have very few busts. He's really their only one. And who were their lead running backs last year? Undrafted Ben Jarvis Green Ellis, undrafted Danny Woodhead. So the Patriots are an example, maybe the number one example of how first-round running backs don't always pan out, and you can get those guys later. So what I'm trying to say here is I think Mark Ingram will probably end up going in the first round, maybe late in the first round, but you can get guys later on in the draft, and I think we're going to see, for sure, we're going to see the end of that streak that has gone since 1963 of running backs taken, of two running backs taken in the first round every year since 1963. I don't think we're going to see two this year. I think there's a pretty good chance we won't see one. But I do think we're going to see the Patriots go for explosiveness, whether it's running back or wide receiver, somewhere in the first, maybe the first two rounds, but certainly in the top three rounds, I do think we're going to see that. You're inside the draft room. We're almost halfway through our first show of 2011. We're going to take a quick break, get right back to some more draft-related topics, and hopefully your emails at webradio@patriots.com. We'll be right back.
He's the model of speed and precision, a machine that picks apart defenses. This is Wes Welker, part of a last-minute drive to the end zone. He's constantly on the move, and he moves fast. You're just as fast. Introducing Verizon 4G LTE, the fastest, most advanced 4G network in America. With it, you can download a song from VCast Rhapsody faster than the average play can develop. Upload your favorite photo in 6 seconds. Share 10 photos in a minute. Stream video like you're watching an instant replay through a window. It's that smooth, that fast, and it's the only 4G network that can compete with Wes Welker.
Yeah, let's go again.
To learn more about Verizon 4G, visit your local Verizon store for a live demo or visit verizonwireless.com/4GLTE. Rule the air. Verizon. Coverage details at verizonwireless.com.
Okay, I'll have the Giganto Burger with cheese combo.
Oh, will that be all?
That's it.
Go, Pats!
What?
If you're like this man, you have what is known as a healthy obsession with the Patriots.
Hi, just the jeans today?
Yeah, thanks.
Go, Pats!
Okay, that was weird.
I know, right?
At Bank of America, we understand, and we can help.
I'll just take this with you already.
Oh, here you go.
Go, Pats!
Indeed. Go, Pats.
With Patriots checking from Bank of America, you can do more than just tell the world about your loyalty. You can show them by getting the Patriots logo on your checks and debit cards.
I say, here's a baguette. Go long.
I'm open.
Whoops. Ask your Bank of America associate if Patriots checking is right for you. Or go to bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Bank of America N.A. member FDIC. Copyright 2010 Bank of America Corporation. An account setup fee may apply in some states.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live, shop retailers, and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on-site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epochere. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Rock the Plaza every Saturday and Sunday, to the Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday, to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
Now's your chance. Hit up B-Low in the draft room at 508-543-7482 or email webradio@patriots.com.
Welcome back inside the draft room. I'm Brian Lowe here on patriots.com radio. We are talking about the NFL draft. What's better than that? What's better than that? Mock drafts and what are the Patriots going to do? And you know, I saw Brian Billick on Twitter today saying with six of the first 100 picks, the NFL draft may as well be the New England Patriots Invitational. I mean, how can we not get excited about that if you're a Patriots fan and you're getting ready for 3 weeks from tomorrow night? That's the one drawback. I love the draft being on a Thursday night, starting on a Thursday night. Love the fact that it's 3 days. It's first round on Thursday night, second and third round on Friday night, four through seven all day Saturday. The one drawback is that's a long day Thursday to wait for the draft to come. That is a long day. I remember when the draft started at noon on a Saturday, and just those couple hours in the morning, you're antsy, you're ready for it to come. On a Thursday night, at whatever time it starts, I probably should know, it's 7:30, 8 o'clock, whatever time it starts, that's a long day of waiting for the Carolina Panthers to finally make their pick. But it's going to be a lot of fun coming up. And Brian Billick calling at the New England Patriots Invitational. And I'll be honest, when I was at the Combine asking around different NFL observers, reporters, even general managers, you know, a lot of people really do feel like the Patriots hold the keys to this year's draft. They can do just about anything. They can move all the way up if they want. I don't mean all the way up like number one, but they can move into the top 10 if they want. They can move into 2012, and let's be honest, they love moving into the next year. And they have committed theft. I mean theft, not the kind of theft that Mike Vrabel committed allegedly, potentially, at a casino the other day in Indiana. But they have committed theft each of the last 3 years. Last year, they traded a third-round pick. They traded a third-round pick to the Carolina Panthers for the Panthers' second-round pick this year. The Panthers, of course, stunk last year. have the first pick in the draft, which means they have the first pick in the second round. And to obtain Armonte Edwards, the Carolina Panthers ended up giving the New England Patriots the 33rd pick in this year's draft. The Pats made similar trades the previous few years with Jacksonville and Tennessee, all of them heavily in the Patriots' favor. And listen, I understand the thinking from the other team's perspective. We have a guy we want, we have a guy we desperately need, and we need to give up a pick next year to get him, a pick one round ahead. But the Patriots, whether it's that they have foresight to know that the teams they're trading with are not going to be very good, or if it's just we know it's their MO to have an abundance of picks in any one given year and trade a few into next year, but they have committed theft with some of these teams.
But from a Carolina's, like, say you're a Carolina Panthers fan, from their perspective, to give up that pick for a 1AA quarterback, I believe, at Appalachian State.
Yep, that they were converting to another position.
Who did win a couple national championships, to be fair, in college. But it's a little bit suspect to be giving up that juicy of a pick for a 1AA quarterback.
And at the time, you know, you're a Carolina Panthers fan. I guess you give them the benefit of the doubt. Well, this guy must be special. Boy, oh boy, were they wrong. And now you're that same Carolina Panther fan. And you're excited about the number one pick. You hope that they make the right call.
You could be excited, but you have to be nervous given their track record.
Absolutely.
Of picking
and
draft.
And you look at how many needs the Carolina Panthers have, and you say, wow, that 33rd pick would be pretty important.
Because for all intents and purposes, it's like a first-round pick almost.
Basically first-round pick. I mean, it's the difference between 32 and 33.
Exactly.
I mean,
it's nothing.
You can get a starter. I mean, the 33rd pick last year.
You can get a starter who will come in and contribute right away.
The 33rd pick last year was Roger Saffold by the Rams, mm-hmm. who was their starting left tackle.
Yep.
Left tackle. I mean, he's their starting left tackle.
Important position.
Pretty important position. So, you know, the Patriots, they have these six picks in the top 100. They've got three of the top 33, number 60, two in the first round, second round, third round. They can move around any way they want, up, down, into next year. They can do a lot of different things. So I thought that Brian Billick tweet earlier was pretty interesting. I want to talk about a couple of positions now that are very interesting to me in this year's draft. Quarterback, and that goes without saying, and offensive tackle. Let's talk a little bit more about quarterback, which we addressed at the beginning. Blaine Gabbert, Cam Newton. You got Blaine Gabbert who, you know, I always, at this time every year, I always feel like, man, I dropped the ball. I should have been watching more college football during the season. But, hey, I'm so tied into the NFL and fantasy football and all that. You only have so many hours in the day and so many hours in the weekend to follow everything. I really knew very little about Blaine Gabbert. I remember in January, February, as I was beginning to get a feel for this year's draft, Blaine Gabbert is supposed to be a top five pick. This guy, I didn't have that connection to college football enough in 2010 to know that Blaine Gabbert was that good. And I'm not sold on him right now either. You know, coming from a spread offense, he's got good size. I just don't feel like he's got number one draft pick overall essence to him. But I do think he's going to go number one to Carolina. And Don Banks, who referred to an article earlier, I think he is generally on target with his mock drafts. And I'll never forget 2008, the day before the draft, when he uncovered what the Patriots were going to do, trade down from 7 to 10 with New Orleans and pick Gerard Mayo, and that's exactly what they did. So knowing that he nailed that one, I appreciate his mock drafts very well, very much. He has Blaine Gabbert going number one overall. Again, I think that's going to happen. I really do think the Panthers are going to go in that direction, but I'm not sold. I'm not sold on Blaine Gabbert. I'm also not sold on Cam Newton. And I think he could be the kind of player that could transform an organization from the dregs of the league to top-tier elite status on the field, off the field, selling tickets, the charisma, everything like that. I think he could be a tremendous NFL player. I just don't know where his head is at. I just don't know if he is going to be, I don't know if he's going to be Jamarcus Russell, but I don't know that he is going to be, you know, Sam Bradford, Matthew Stafford, other guys who have been drafted number one overall. Don't know if he's going to be that, if he's going to do that. I feel like he can, he's got the arm strength. He's got the accuracy. He had one unbelievable year, but is one unbelievable year enough to say he is going to revolutionize our team?
I know a lot of people talking about Cam Newton, they bring up not just his what he did at Auburn, but didn't he win like a championship at a JUCO?
Had a tremendous year in
high
college.
School. Like he's won three championships, so he's won at every level he's played at.
He's got an ability to bring a team together,
yes.
to be a leader and on a team.
And that's something that you can't necessarily teach.
You
so
can't
that's an
teach
important
that.
Intangible when you look at drafting a player.
Right. And I think that could be, you know, he could be that kind of leader where he's, you know, maybe he'll be a first guy into the building, last guy to leave type of guy. But he still needs to be able to focus fully on knowing how to be a quarterback, learning his team's playbook, digging in 100%. And I think teams don't really feel that they're convinced that he will do that. But, you know, you got Newton and Gabbert who get plenty of attention. They're the number one, number two guys. I think there's incredible intrigue with the next tier of quarterbacks. And I'm talking about the Lockers, the Ponders, the Mallets. Talking about Colin Kaepernick, Andy Dalton, and I think there are going to be more guys taken in round one than we think right now. I think there's going to be more guys taken in the top 50 than we think. I think all of those guys might go in the top 50 because what's going to happen is the first round might come and go, and then teams are going to look, teams that are, you know, whether it be Carolina, Buffalo, Cincinnati, Arizona, San Fran, Tennessee, you know, all those teams that pick in the top 8, Washington as well, picking the top 10. They're not all taking quarterbacks in the first round. In fact, probably only one or two will. They might all be looking for quarterbacks in the early part of round two, and I think they're going to get them. I think Christian Ponder is a guy who could be, he's got injury concerns, but I think he's really a total package kind of quarterback who can come in and be a pretty good player right away, I think. And I think a team like maybe Washington, maybe Tennessee might pounce on him. I think Jake Locker, you know, he's got some accuracy issues, but I think he's a top of the second round kind of guy. I think Ryan Mallett, he's got some immaturity issues, but I think in the second round, that's where he can and should go. I think there's great potential for these second tier quarterbacks, and I think a lot of them are going to go really in the second round. Webradio at patriots.com is the way to reach us. Webradio at patriots.com. We have an email here from Nathan. Sup, B-Low. List your top three pass rushers, which most would agree is our most pressing need. After a pass rusher, what area do you think we need to improve on the most? Who might be some potential prospects? And Nathan says he's listening via podcast. Sorry if we've already addressed this, but Nathan, we have a little bit, but not as in detail as you're asking about right there. Great call. Who are the top three pass rushers for the Patriots? Because that's what he's getting at. Different teams have different thoughts on who would be one, two, three, and all that. I think J.J. Watt is number one. I think J.J. Watt's number one. I think he's the complete package, and I think he is a guy, if they take him at number 17, I think it would be a great pick. Now, I say that knowing that really almost every year, the Patriots' number one need is the pass rush, and they rarely address the pass rush, whether it be defensive end or outside linebacker, early in the draft.
Yeah, it's generally that mid-level where they start to...
It's usually the late level.
Yeah. Well, wasn't Cunningham a fourth-rounder, though?
Cunningham was a second-rounder, and he's the rarity.
I'm way off then.
But he's the exception. Before that, Tully Bantakane was the top pass rusher they'd taken in seventh round. They just don't take the guys because of how tough the transition is. But eventually, I think they've got to take a chance on a guy. You know, they've gotten a lot of criticism on Clay Matthews. Not taking Clay Matthews. He's not the ideal size for them as a pass rusher. He doesn't have the three down capabilities. Well, I don't know. I think you got to go with a guy like J.J. Watt this year. I think he'd be a great pass rushing guy. I think Cameron Jordan. I buy into Cameron Jordan. I really do. I think Cameron Jordan is one of the. I think he's a great fit for a 3-4. I think he's more of a true defensive end than a lot of these other guys who, you know, they might have to worry about a transition as far as positions. But I think he's, you know, you're not going to see huge sack totals out of a guy like Cameron Jordan, but he can stop the run and he's relentless. I think he's a willing pass rusher, an able pass rusher, but you know, elite pass rushers in a Patriots 3-4 system are not the guys necessarily that rack up the sacks. The outside linebackers do. So I think J.J. Watt, I think Cameron Jordan, and, I'm not sold on Ryan Kerrigan, Adrian Claiborne, and all that, but I think Akeem Ayers is a guy to look out for. Now, I've talked about Justin Houston as well. I think Justin Houston, Akeem Ayers might be in the same category for me in terms of the fit for the Patriots and where they'll be taken. So give me J.J. Watt, Cameron Jordan, and then I'm going to go Akeem Ayers with a slight edge over Justin Houston. Those would be the top four. I do think pass rush, Nathan, is the number one area. And then I mentioned earlier, the number two area, I think, as far as needs for the Patriots, offensive line, whether it's tackle or interior, I think you could make a case that they have needs across the board on the offensive line. And then it's explosiveness on offense. Wide receiver, running back, speed, and explosiveness on offense. Those are my next needs. Thank you, Nathan. Appreciate the email there. Webradio@patriots.com. Let's talk about offensive tackle a little bit. And at least one offensive tackle has been taken in the top five of the draft each of the last 5 years. At least one. You know, Jake Long went number one overall. But in each of the last 5 years, in the top five, there's been at least one offensive tackle. That's not going to happen this year. It doesn't look like. But the sweet spot for offensive tackle is right where the Patriots have their three picks, 17 to 33. I think the run on offensive tackles will begin right around where the Patriots make their first pick, and I would not be surprised if the Patriots begin that run. As far as offensive tackles, there's a core four or five. Tyron Smith, the young gun out of USC. He's not going to be 21 years old until December, meaning he's going to go through most of his rookie year as a 20-year-old. But he is seen as an elite pass blocker and a guy who I think he played a lot of right tackle, but he could be a cornerstone left tackle for a team. Up the road from where we are right now, Anthony Costanzo. Total package, I think. Big.
Smart kid,
experienced,
too.
Smart. He'd be a rocket scientist, I think they say, if he weren't
pretty
an NFL
much,
guy.
Yeah.
He can pass block. He can run block. I think he set a school record for starts in a BC career. So you've got Tyron Smith, Anthony Costanzo, Nate Solder out of Colorado, Gabe Karimi out of Wisconsin. You've got a handful of guys right there, and I know I'm missing. Oh, Derek Sherrod of Mississippi State is another one. You've got five guys who I think could all go in the first round. They could all go between 17 and 32. I think for sure they're all going to go between say 15 and 40, and I think they could all be really good. I think. With offensive tackle, now granted, you've got your Andre Smiths here and there, guys who are busts, but I bet the percentage of offensive tackles taken in the first round, or even say the first two rounds, safer than a lot of other positions.
Yeah, I bet the success rate is pretty high.
The success rate is higher.
Yeah.
And I think that these guys are all going to be legitimate tackles in the NFL. Boston College, every year, they've got good offensive linemen. They produce offensive linemen as well as almost any school in the country. And I think Costanzo is going to be the next in line. I think Costanzo should be the first tackle taken. And I think Gabe Karimi should be number two. Like Tyron Smith a lot, but I think that experience factor, I think the experience factor for these other guys is why they will be solid pros. And I think the inexperience factor for Tyron Smith is what makes him a little more risky. Especially in this year, as I talked about earlier, this year, you don't know if you're going to get a rookie in your camp early enough to know what he needs to know for this year's draft. So that makes it a little more tricky to select these guys. But, you know, there might not be a tackle in the top five or even the top 10, which is rare in the recent era. But you're going to see a bunch of them in the first round, and I think they're all legit NFL tackles. So if I'm the Patriots, I'm looking very closely at these guys. I was at BC's Pro Day 2 weeks ago today, and Dante Scarnecchia was extremely hands-on. Dante Scarnecchia led the offensive line drills for the Boston College Pro Day, and you had Costanzo. You also had Rich Lapham, who is a later-round guy out of BC.
Yeah.
But they have two guys who will be drafted at offensive tackle.
Yeah, and he battled some injury this year, especially with his legs, which is a little bit concerning to the team that may draft him, but I think before those injuries kind of kept him out, he was even a higher pick. I had read some stuff projecting him in like the fourth or fifth round until those injuries kind of crept up with him this year.
Yeah, but Dante Scarnecchia, there were only two offensive line coaches at Boston College's Pro Day, and I don't know how often. Usually you don't see position coaches at Pro Days. Usually, and I'm no Pro Day expert. Yeah. I'm not the authority on Pro Days.
Yeah.
But Pro Days, you often see scouts. See some GMs, you see some head coaches. You don't always see the position coaches. Yeah. Those are more on, you know, individual workouts and all that. But Dante Scarnecchia was literally hands-on. He wasn't just teaching the drills. He grabbed Anthony Costanzo and other linemen by the collar and put them in position where they need to be.
Yeah.
Not in a ruthless way like we see Dante Scarnecchia treat the rookie offensive lineman.
You don't cross Dante.
This was a teaching day. And Dante Scarnecchia, I think because of that, I think he probably knows exactly what we're getting out of Anthony Costanzo.
Yeah.
It's a small sample size, one-hour pro day.
I think also, Bilo, it's convenient when you have a prospect that could be a first-round pick at a position that the Patriots are definitely looking at to have him right up the road so you can see him play a half a dozen times a year. And our position coach, like Dante, can just drive up there.
Yeah.
It makes it very convenient to be able to work with him. I think you get a better sense of what he can do as opposed to viewing from afar, watching tape, to actually physically, like you said, put your hands on him. And get an idea of how he responds to that as well. It's a big plus.
But here's the important note on this particular situation: Dante Scarnecchia coaching up Anthony Costanzo at his pro day, but also any individual visits. You see, the Patriots had a visit with so and so. So and so came to Gillette Stadium. We know that Dante Scarnecchia has some pretty good firsthand knowledge of Anthony Costanzo. But what we don't know is what is that knowledge. He might have found out on that day, you know what?
They didn't want him.
Good player. It's going to be a good pro.
Not our player.
Not our guy.
Yeah.
So all we know, or all I think we know, is that Dante Scarnecchia knows everything there is to know.
Which is good.
About Anthony Costanzo.
That's about all you can ask.
That's about all you can ask.
He's not going to tell you if he's our guy or not.
Oh,
anyway.
Of course not. And we don't even try. But I feel confident that Dante Scarnecchia knows what Anthony Costanzo is all about. The Giants offensive line coach was also there, Pat Flaherty, another team probably looking for offensive line help. So I don't know exactly which other pro days Dante Scarnecchia has gone to. I think he went to Utah last week. I think there were some reports of that. But I feel very comfortable in saying the Patriots are looking closely, I think, at first-round caliber offensive linemen. So those tackles, who among those tackles will be the best fit for the Patriots, I don't know. But I would not be surprised if one of those five is a Patriot. Karimi, Solder, Smith, Costanzo, Sherrod. And I think they're all going to go in that first round, late first round area. There's a lot of teams. A lot of teams that could really use a top-notch tackle. The Giants, the Bears, who else? Probably Indianapolis. Teams that definitely could use some help there. Now we move inside the interior offensive line positions. And on Patriots Today, we're in the middle of our draft previews. We had the offensive tackle preview yesterday, and we're going to have offensive guard, guard center by the end of the week. So be sure to check that out. You know, it's really all about Mike Pouncey in terms of the first round interior lineman. And Pouncey at the draft basically said he's got to be taken before his brother. His brother was taken 18th overall. I think they got some sibling rivalry there. Well, maybe number 17 is the spot. I don't think Mike Pouncey is going to go before 17. But what's the trick with Pouncey this year is he was really a very good offensive guard for Florida. When his brother Marquise, the center, left last year and was in the draft, he moved to center and struggled. Struggled with the snaps. So I think most likely he's a guard in the NFL. Maybe he needs to retransition himself back to guard, but I think the fact that his brother had such a successful year in the NFL, I think that boosts his grade a little bit, and I think he's a first round, say somewhere between 17 and 28 kind of guy. I think he's a safe guy in this year's draft. I think when you look at how volatile the draft might be, I think Mike Pouncey is in the top five, not in the top five in terms of where he's going to be taken, but I think he's in the top five in terms of safe first-round picks. If the Patriots draft Mike Pouncey, my belief is they can slide him right into the right guard or even left guard if need be in 2011. Remember what happened in 2005. Joe Andruzzi, dependable left guard for this team with three Super Bowl rings. He leaves for the Cleveland Browns as a free agent. The Patriots take a relative no-name, Logan Mankins, in the first round, the last pick of the first round, and it was like clockwork. He was taken. He's the starting left guard. There were no bones about it. It was pretty simple. They lost Joe Andruzzi in free agency. They selected Logan Mankins in the first round, and he's been their starter ever since, other than his holdout last year at left guard. I think they could do the same with Mike Pouncey, and it would be successful. And I really feel as though if, in my opinion is, with those first two picks, 17 and 28, if they make those two picks, and let's be honest, they'll probably trade one. If they make those two picks, I think it's going to be pass rush at one of them, and I think it's going to be offensive line at the other, and I think Mike Pouncey is a very safe guy. Danny Watkins is the other intriguing guy at offensive guard. He's 26 years old. We talked about Tyron Smith, who's 20. He's going to be 20 through most of the year. And how does that inexperience, that youth, play into whether a team selects Tyron Smith? Well, Danny Watkins is 26. He's from Canada. He was a firefighter before he decided to devote himself full-time to playing offensive line at Baylor. And now he's a guy with, you know, good experience in college. He's probably a little more mature than most draft picks this year. He's, you know, physically, he's probably exactly where he's going to be for the next 10 years, whereas 20, 21, 22-year-old maybe won't be. And I think Danny Watkins is an interesting guy who might be very dependable, might be able to come right in and play right away. That experience factor or age factor is offset maybe by the fact that he really didn't play much football until much later in life, or later in life relative to the NFL draft. So a tougher projection, but I think Danny Watkins, probably a second rounder, could come in and be a team's right or left guard right away. Some very interesting prospects along the offensive line, and would love to hear your thoughts. Patriots, web radio at patriots.com on wide receiver, on a quarterback or offensive line, a couple positions we're talking about right now. As we look at mock drafts, and I mentioned Don Banks' mock draft, and we can spend endless amounts of time on mock drafts. Not exactly the route we're going to take. We're not going to sit here on every Wednesday from 12 to 1 inside the draft room and just read off mock drafts endlessly, because I feel like you can do that on your own. You don't need me to tell you what Don Banks has in his mock draft, what Todd McShay has, what Rob Rang on CBSSports.com has, any of these other guys. You can go see for yourself. But we're going to pick and, you know, poke around here and there at mock drafts. And, you know, Don Banks, like I said, he nailed the Patriots draft in 2008, and he's got J.J. Watt for the Patriots at number 17 and Danny Watkins at number 28. Very interesting. I love the J.J. Watt pick. I think Watkins, that might be a little early, 28. But, like I said, I think the Patriots will feel as though if they can get a starter on the offensive line at that 28 pick, which I think they can, I think all of these guys that I mentioned, those five offensive tackles, those two guards, if any of them are there at 28, I think that's the right spot for a lot of these guys. I think Pouncey's gone before 28. I think Danny Watkins should be later than that. But those offensive tackles, I think right there, that's where they'll go. Just for the sake of argument, Don Banks, his top five, he's got Gabbert, number one, to Carolina, Marcell Dareus, number two, to Denver, Cam Newton, three, to Buffalo, A.J. Green, four, to the Bengals, and Von Miller, number five, to Arizona. From an AFC East perspective, the Buffalo Bills at number three is a very interesting spot for the Patriots from the Patriots' perspective. If they go Cam Newton, you know, that changes the dynamic of that rivalry, to be honest with you. I don't think Cam Newton comes into the Bills and they win games this year because of Cam Newton, but I think for the first time in a while, he's a guy that the Patriots need to focus on when they're getting they need to focus on that quarterback position, the dynamic that the quarterback position provides the Bills for the first time in a while, maybe really since Bledsoe. And to be honest, I don't think they really felt they needed to game plan for Bledsoe when they traded him. But I think watching what the Bills do at number three is going to be very interesting. I think the Bills screwed up big time last year. Big time last year by taking C.J. Spiller. And yes, I have the ability of hindsight right now. C.J. Spiller was not a good selection, but I felt last year for the Bills, what was the one position on their entire roster a year ago that you'd say they're in pretty good shape? Running back. Marshawn Lynch, a very good running back. Fred Jackson, a very good running back as well. That combined with the fact that running backs in the first round are more of a luxury than a necessity, and the fact that C.J. Spiller was a reach by any team at number nine last year, you know, the Bills could have gone in so many other directions. That was not a good pick. Because of that, they can still go in a lot of different directions. Really, other than running back, once again, what would you say is a position that they're all set at? Really none. So whether they go quarterback or another position, you know, maybe they go, defensive line with a Marcel Darius if he's still there, Nick Fairley, or maybe, you know, they go cornerback Patrick Peterson. I think they're a very interesting team to look at. You know, the Chan Gailey, Buddy Nix combo, you don't really have a feel for exactly what their mentality is just after one draft, so hard to say which way they're going to go, but interesting to see from an AFC East perspective which direction they might go. Rob Rang on CBSSports.com, I really enjoy reading his blog. He's got a lot of information, and his top five is Cam Newton, number one overall, Marcel Darius, number two, Von Miller, number three, Blaine Gabbert, four, and Robert Quinn, number five. I think Robert Quinn is, he's an interesting guy in the sense that he missed all of last year with a suspension. He had a brain tumor earlier in his life, but he could be an ideal guy for a 3-4 defense, and if he's available, not for the Patriots at 17, I think he'll be gone by then, but if he's still there around 10, 12, I think he could be a guy that if the Patriots move up, he might be the target.
And he's been moving up the draft board for many people.
He's been moving up.
No, he's Andy Quinn's number one overall. That's Andy Quinn's binky, Robert Quinn.
You mean Andy Hart.
Andy, yes. I'm calling him Andy Quinn, which would probably be, Andy would take that as a compliment.
He would take that as a compliment. You're right. But I think when I think about the guys projected to go top 15, and considering would the Patriots move up, you know, there aren't that many guys that I'd say he's worth trading up for. Robert Quinn might be one of them. You know, would the Patriots trade up for A.J. Green or Julio Jones? It would be uncharacteristic of them to A, move up, and B, select a wide receiver that high, but I wouldn't rule it out. So I think it would be interesting to see if the Patriots have a chance at someone they're targeting around 10, 12, do they go up for? Inside the Draft Room, that is the show you're listening to right now. Every Wednesday, next week, the week after that, which is the day before the draft, and then the week after the draft, you can catch us right here, 12 to 1 Eastern on Patriots.com radio. Next week, we want to hear from you. We've had a taste of this. We didn't have a ton of emails this week, but that's fine. You've had a taste of this show. We talk draft across the board. The Patriots, the NFL, we're going to get some guests. We want to hear from you on a couple of different topics. Should the Patriots move up in the draft? And if so, who should they target? What do you think of Cam Newton and Blaine Gabbert? Are they going to be top five picks this year? What do you think of them? What would you say are the Patriots' top three needs? Any question you want to have asked about the 2011 draft, we want to hear from you, webradio@patriots.com, each and every Wednesday. You can also hear a replay of this at 3 o'clock on Thursdays. I believe, I'm sorry, 2 o'clock. Is it 3 o'clock or 2 o'clock?
3 o'clock, right, 3 after, o'clock on right after PFW in progress.
PFW in progress goes 12 to 3?
12 to 2.
12 to 2.
So it's 2 to 3.
2 to 3. That's what I'm asking there,
figuring
Kevin.
Figuring it out together.
Come on, Kevin. Whatever. You know, at the break, you told me 3 o'clock. I wrote it down. That didn't sound right. 2 to 3 on Thursday. You can
it was my understanding that there would be no math.
Yeah, and this shouldn't be hard math. 2, 3, 1 hour. You know, come on, Kevin. We need better than that. But like me, we're both a little rusty, I guess. So we want to hear from you each and every week. Also, Patriots Today, we've got our draft previews twice a week through the draft. Check those out on Patriots Today as well. Thank you very much for listening to the debut show of Inside the Draft Room for 2011. We'll be back next week, Inside the Draft Room.